Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This week, we are taking you on a tour of Skringrad. Let me try that again. This week, we are taking you on a tour of Skingrad. We're going to take a look at all of the things that you may not have noticed and give you a little bit of a history lesson about this really cool city that is now in ESO because of the last update. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm ready to get into it. Lotus, are you ready?
I am. Let's do this.
Check this out. This is the first time we've done an episode with video and audio this way. I'm going to start over here by the temple, and we're going to go back to the crypt. And Lotus, I'm going to share with you one of the things that I think is super cool about this city. Did you know that there's a ghost just hanging out in the back of the town? His name is Guzguk.
Guzguk, I believe. Yeah, just chilling by the grave.
And if you talk to him, he stands up and he says, "Don't mind me. No one cared when I was alive, and no one cares now that I'm dead." And he actually has a second line, too. Here, I'm going to bug him a second time.
I'm going to say that opening line's pretty emo.
Yeah. And then he says, "I died from exhaustion, and now I'm eternally tired. So, you know, boo. Whatever." Like, this guy's great, but he hangs out here. It's not even nighttime right now. He hangs out here all day, all night. He's always in front of this grave.
Yeah, he's just perpetually chilling. He's kind of just depressed over in the corner. Usually there's some type of purpose to ghosts in series, so it is kind of weird that he's just like dead from exhaustion and hanging out.
Not really sure
how much of a deeper purpose he's really going to find in... well, not life, but death.
right.
But yeah, it's just like he becomes part of the scenery, so to speak, in Skingrad around the second era here.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of other stuff I'm going to be taking you on a tour of as we go over some of the history in Skingrad. So, Lotus, let's talk a little bit about the first era. Skingrad, we know the history goes back to the time of the Aeliads, right?
Right. And it's interesting because... we didn't really know exactly. The Aeliads obviously had a lot of Daedric prince worship, Daedra worship, and stuff like that. But it was interesting because until more recently, we didn't really have a full context of some of the Daedric princes that might actually be related to it, which has come to light in the newest Elder Scrolls expansion with Gold Road with Athelia.
Yeah, because we know the Aeliads worshipped Daedric princes, but just like people do with the Aedra or the Divines, oftentimes they have specific ones they worship for different reasons. Or,
sure.
Or, for example, right here, check this out. We've got the Temple of Julianos, which is just like a lot of the other Cyrodiilic cities have these big temples to the Divines. This one is specifically for, it's for all of them, but it's named after Julianos because that's right. The focus of this city, right?
Yeah, sort of like their patron saint almost, which for anybody who doesn't know, I'm pretty sure we've done an episode on Julianos, but it's a lot of design around like logic and reason, stuff like that. And that's just sort of the focus for this temple and this temple district.
Right. And the temple here was built way after the Aeliads. So the Ciro Nords, the Nords from up northern, actually way up as far north as the Nords go. But eventually the ones that lived in Skyrim and then in Cyrodiil moved down into the Skingrad area in the First Age. And there was the Alessian Rebellion. They fought back against the Aeliads. They took over this town, which was an Aeliad location originally. And then they erected their own monuments, their own buildings, and their own temple. And that basically is what buried the worship of Athelia in the past. So now right. We have, check this out, we have the temple here. And here's another fun little note. It's these temples are so beautiful. They're built a lot like real-world cathedrals. And we have over here an artist who's, this is Hondre Hazet, who's doing a nice little... Oil painting.
Yeah. In game.
Of the temple.
But of the temple, which is, it's funny. We always talk about the like real world flair to make the Elder Scrolls series kind of feel real. And that takes place in ESO just as much as the other games, because that's I mean, I've been to Paris on my honeymoon, and like people would be painting these amazing pieces of architecture from the past just on, like, on the side streets, and you could watch them paint. And it's kind of funny that that type of thing is just integrated into the city. It's something you see in the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion to a little lesser extent, just based on tech and stuff like that, obviously.
Right, right. But get this. What I find so funny about this is, do you notice this? We're on the side of the temple here, and yet he's painting...
Oh, yeah, he's the front,
of the temple. In order to get that view, you have to go over here. He should be set up by this cart right here in front of this little pond, getting a view of the front.
But and he's there's not. A little of that Bethesda magic we all love.
Right? Right? Like, he's just checking his angles.
Checking his angles.
Says Rob in chat. All right, so here's another one I want to take you on. We're gonna head into the temple. And one of the other cool things about the temple and the worship of Julianos is that Julianos is the Aedra who is in charge of like logic and reason and that sort of thing. And so this city has become a center for philosophy and the debating of a bunch of different ideas and things like that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. I guess in sort of like a different direction, which I just find kind of funny because... That's a very good point, and it's something that you both encounter in Elder Scrolls Online, and you get a feel for it in the Elder Scrolls Oblivion as well. But not to jump too far ahead, but they're also known for their winemaking in their vineyards, which is the exact opposite of logic and reasoning once you have too much of it, which is kind of funny.
Once you've had too much to drink, you don't think so well. That's fun, because we're gonna check out some of the wine shops in a little bit.
Yeah,
we'll see
that later. But to be fair, you need to stay logical if you don't want to overdo it with that anyways. So I guess that's where it comes back into play a bit, because you got to control the situation to actually make a profit.
Right, right. So check this out. I'm inside the temple now, and there are some really cool details. These temples look a lot like they did in Oblivion. You have the stained glass on the windows. And if you look on the ground, this is another feature. Depending on the time of day, the light comes through the windows and creates colored light on the ground.
Yep.
And this is really cool. Different parts of the day, the light is actually brighter from different sides. And it paints the inside with this like a set of colors from all the colored glass, which is really cool. On the left here, you have the different altars, I guess you can say, for the different Aedra.
Yep.
And there's four on each side because this is the second era. Talos isn't a thing yet. We don't have Tiber Septim. And strangely enough, I kind of expected that Julianos would be here in the middle. But
yeah, no, I was going to say, it was funny enough, if for anybody watching the video, the first one you went to over in the initial corner is actually Julianos with the little pyramid.
Yeah, the first one on the left over here, this is Julianos, the pyramid. And over here on the other side, you have some of these, like this one, for example, has, this is Mara's, and it has flowers on it, which makes sense for Mara.
Yes.
Which is really cool. Now, there is a little detail in here you may not have noticed. You know how in Oblivion you can head down and oftentimes you can go through this door and get down into the crypts?
Yes, down into the crypts.
Well, this one's locked. You can't go in it. But this guy right here, Athis Elval, is hiding away from the Legion. He's a legionary soldier, but he's a Dunmer, and he set up his own little pallet down here. He's been sleeping in this little pre-basement area, just kind of hanging out. Like, you can even see his socks on the ground.
Well, as is, I was going to say, oftentimes you'll use religious places as a form of sanctuary, so he's just gonna hang out in the basement, I guess.
Right.
Time being.
Right. How cool is that? He's like this this just bum. He's just bumming it in the temple because he's trying to stay away from
squatter in the lower area
from his post. Yeah. So all right. So let's say we've got the temple, which is kind of a big part of the city. The alien worshiping the Daedra stuff going on, and then you have all of these different vendors and people working throughout the city, and they did a really good job laying out different shops and things, even shops that aren't super useful. So or at least super useful for us as gamers, I guess,
like
you could
player
say.
Player characters.
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, there's this guy right here. He's near one of the like the front most northern gate. This guy, Olivier Manic, and he's carrying around planks of wood because he's a barrel maker. And it makes sense that they need barrels because of the wine industry.
Correct. And that's just it. They've got a... The town of Skingrod, as big as it is, it's really like it gives off the hub vibe, like it, which works in an MMO sense. But the concept of it being like a commerce hub fits with having, you've got your shops that could be of use, but then there's multiple things that really wouldn't relate to you, but it would make the city make sense.
Right.
Which is one of the strong points that the series kind of does, is they make the cities make sense. They're designed more from a logical standpoint first and a gameplay standpoint second. Sometimes that can make traversing them kind of tricky because they're not designed with gameplay first.
Right.
But yeah.
So here's another one. This, I don't know if you noticed this, but over here by the temple, here, I'm over, again, right by the temple, near the, where the guy was doing the art. Over here on the side, there is a woman. Her name's Casonaire, and she's making all of this intricate glass-blown cups and saucers, and you can even see her kiln over here with some glass in it that's melting. And then the big rods of glass that get melted and then eventually shaped into all of these things. She has this whole shop over here. You can't actually buy anything from her, but she's a glass merchant. It's so cool. And all the colors and everything, it's very neat.
And it's worth noting, just because it's a crossover to the series and one that I tend to have kind of related to me when people joke about like my in-game stuff. This is glass as in like literal functional glass, not as in like malachite glass armor.
Right.
Very different things. Right. Just pointing that out because, it's, again, these are like for dishware and stuff like that. So it's like literal modern day glass. Well, not... all-purpose real-life glass blowing as well.
Yeah, just like anybody in a village or a town would need somebody to be making things out of glass so that people can buy and sell and use that, right?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah, so... exactly. You need the glass to make, like, an amphora to carry water. You can't just have... No, I guess you could have a rock, but...
Yeah. So, that's true. So, we talked about the first era, and then we talked a little bit about the winemaking and stuff. In the first era, we have the Alessian Revolt, right? And then eventually... the city of Skingrad kind of defines itself as its own location, like its own little sub-kingdom. How does that work?
Yeah, so, and that's just it. Where I had mentioned that it's kind of like a trade center or a hub, that's something that sort of develops after and going into the second era, where it starts kind of becoming a literal functional city and a hub point for commerce around the region. And it's down toward, like, it's not central, like the White Gold Tower or like the Imperial City, which you could see as like a literal central point, but it's a little off to the side. However, it's got access points to a lot of areas of Tamriel. So as a result of that, and, you know, it's got a lot of growth potential there, that sort of defined it as like a hub. And especially when you have, as we had mentioned, like merchants, scholars, stuff like that, they will design the city around what is needed, because it's not going to be this poverty stricken area that is just like doing their best to get by. When you have figureheads planning things, you have a patron deity essentially of logic and reasoning, planning out how the city will be designed and used is much more likely, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it feels like a very intentional place.
It's a deliberate city.
Right. And the architecture is really cool. I mean, just looking at, like, I've been to places in Europe that kind of look like this, these stone buildings, these arches. Also, one of the things that is worth noting when you go visit Skingrad in the game are all of these large sculpted, they appear to be made out of some form of stone, but they show up on buildings, these designs that look like they are, I don't know, maybe they're the crest of the noble family that lives in that building or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're huge.
It does look like a crest.
Yeah.
For sure.
And you see them on lots of different buildings, and they're actually very large, and I'm sure they're not cheap to make. And some of them only show up like once, twice, three times in the whole city. So from a meta perspective, somebody designing the game spent a lot of time designing these, and then they get used like once.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're digitally sculpting something that would take a long time to sculpt if you were doing that in real life.
Right. So, okay, so let's move on from the first era into the second era. That's when the winemaking starts. right?
Yeah. That's when some of these deliberate choices start kind of like turning this into its little metropolis style existence that it's sort of known as through the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm. So you end up with like this cross culture of philosophers and thinkers, but also merchants and also different races, because it kind of borders on some of the areas that are on the southwest side of the map. So closer to right. the Bosmer and some of these other, it's kind of like a mixing of cultures. And then you end up with some cool places like this. Like, this is a woodworker over here. This is Dreekook. And Dreekook is an Argonian. And Dreekook makes things out of wood, primarily shields and things for bows and arrows. And in fact, yeah, there's a bunch of these little targets.
Hay targets and stuff.
Yeah, little hay targets all over his stuff, which is pretty cool. And then if we head over this way, I think this is one of my favorite things. Well, before we get there, there's this statue. And I couldn't figure out who this is. If this is Queen Alessia, that doesn't really make sense, because the city revolted against, they tried to distance themselves from the Alessian revolution and establish themselves as a separate kingdom. So it does, I mean, the woman has a hood, she has a bird in her hand. I'm not sure exactly who this is. You can't see the ear, so it's hard to tell if they're human or elf. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts on the statue?
Look, I don't know. Because again, the other thing that you have with sculptures and like statues, if you don't physically see the person, there is the level of interpretation that comes along. So, you know, we've had plenty of episodes where we've talked about like statues to think, you know, we'll jump to the idea of like versions of deities. Look at the, when you get a stat, like a shrine to Hermaeus Mora, nothing says there's any continuity. Is it going to be a potato lobster crab? Is it going to be like a tentacle monster? Like, it depends on the version seen. Well, when it comes to something like Saint Alessia, well, okay, if that were the case, because I don't have context for what this statue is. If anybody actually knows, I'd be very interested in if there's a concrete answer to this.
Yeah, this dark elf right here, Arvesa Valos, walks up and then bows down in front of the statue, and this legionnaire here, this guard, also making praying symbols to the statue. I'm not sure exactly why they're venerating this statue. It's an interesting little detail. If anybody knows, please comment or let us know what you think. So
yes, and actually, just a point that Rob actually brought up in chat, which I think is worth mentioning. It's a little more than we had mentioned, like distancing a bit from Alessia. Yes, to an extent, but it related more to, as it usually does with these types of things, it was more of the extremists that were kind of like frowned upon, as opposed to the concept of it like being a freeing deity type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Saint Alessia, like it helped with the Alessian rebellion. If had that separation with the Cyrodiilic aliens and stuff like that. So not totally that, but like, you know what I mean? Like it's the extremist outliers ended up kind of bringing a bad name to the situation. Related to that, just worth mentioning.
Yeah. And check this out. Behind the statue, there's this guy who keeps on heading over to this plank, Berald Barine, and doing push-ups with his head over top of some sweet rolls.
All right.
I came to this location before when researching this and saw the sweet rolls. And the second time I ran by and somebody had stolen all this poor guy's sweet rolls. I think that maybe that's motivation for push-ups. I mean,
I was going to say motivation for push-ups or motivation to hit on whoever this statue is.
Yeah.
It's a secret admirer from range.
Right. Now, behind both the statue and the push-up guy is one of the wineries. Check this out. You can't go in here. It's locked up.
Yeah, but this is one of the locked wineries.
But there's all the barrels right here, all stacked up.
And now, as a gauge, there are many wineries and vineyards.
Yes. Yeah, there are a number of them. But it's kind of neat to see how, I mean, even down here, how clearly this place is just designed. I mean, look at this whole section of the building. This is all part of the winery, part of, I don't know, the way they do business.
Probably just the barreling process. Like, this could just be like the you know, the group that seals up the wine so that they can send it to its corresponding locations or whatever across all of, you know, well, I guess all of Tamriel, I was going to say. I don't know about all of Nirn. But.
Yeah, Tamriel probably. All right. And then there's one more thing on this side of the map that I really, really thought was cool. So as you're continuing past the winery area, you'll notice here's the Fighters Guild over here, right? This is the Fighters Guild. There's Bera who says, hey, I have something for you, right? Fighters Guild, you can go inside and look around. But I noticed when coming up over here one day, if you look up, there's a little balcony and you can see some smoke rising from the balcony. So if you head in here,
steam up there.
Yeah, there's like something going on up there. And I was like, oh, that's weird. What's going on up there? Maybe I can get up there. And of course, you can go through the Fighters Guild. And the inside looks very much like a Fighters Guild.
Yeah, it's a pretty standard Fighters Guild.
Pretty standard. But then you can find the little doorway to the balcony and you can go through. And sure enough, there's these little incense things up here on the balcony. And then if you start looking around, you'll notice there's a lute. There's a bunch of wine bottles strewn around. And a chair with a pipe. This is somebody's like chill spot.
Yeah, somebody's been really enjoying life up there.
Yes, this is like somebody's like hangout spot. But even there's even more than just that. Check this out. If you look across the way, remember the guy that was making the archery arrows and the hay targets? There are
targets. There's targets out there.
There are targets across the way, and some of the arrows hit, but most of them, if you really look carefully, didn't, and they're just laying on the roof across the street. So my theory is
living near a winery,
right? My theory is that this is one of the Fighters Guild members. This is like their chill out spot. They drink, they smoke, and then when they're feeling real good, they start shooting at the targets across the way.
How often do you think that ends in tragedy below?
probably more often than you want it to. But yeah, it's pretty cool stuff there. So I thought that was a lot of fun to bring that up. But we got to take a quick little break and go thank our patrons. And then we're going to continue with some more of the fun little things to see around Skingrad and some more of the history, because we still got to talk about the Third Age and the Fourth. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm Tom, and this is Lotus, and we do the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Of course, if you are listening on the audio version of the show, then you know what the deal is. But you may not know that we're trying to change things up a little bit. We thought it would be fun to give you a different perspective on things and create an episode that would be as engaging to both watch and listen to. So we're hoping it works for both. I hope you're enjoying it. Please let us know if you enjoy what we're doing so far.
And we're always looking for feedback on stuff like that, how you like format changes or things specifically that work or don't. That's actually kind of how we like to modify the show here or there.
Right. Always working to improve and kind of change things up in fun and interesting ways. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And also thank you to our patrons, including our newest patrons, Simon, Lucas T, Carrie S, and Graveyard X Puppy. Very interesting names. Thank you for joining us.
I hope that means that the graveyard's not full of puppies, like no puppies. They're all alive and happy.
Or maybe it's like a like graveyard versus a puppy, like combat.
Oh, okay.
Like crossover.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
We started the episode on a graveyard, so why not?
That's true. That's true. And we have to shout out our Daedric Princes, Blinding Vision, Hercene, Just a Little Bit of Chaos, Kirasi, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your support as well. And if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you listen on the audio version, or you can like, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Any of that stuff would help. And we don't have any new ones this week, but that would be a wonderful way to help out the show. You can also rate the show on whatever other platform you're listening to this on, and you can also share it with your friends. So thanks for being here. Let's continue with our look at Skingrad. Here we go.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we're back, and I'm heading back out of the Fighters Guild to the next area, but we need to move on from the first and second era of the world. The end of the second era ends with the Dragon Break, right? And we've got like Talos showing up and all that stuff, but the city sticks around into the third era because, and we know that for a fact because we can definitely visit it in The Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
Yes, it's still there.
It's still there. It's still there.
We haven't lost it. It still exists. Most of the series has not permanently established places, but like this is one of the ones that has stayed the ages, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. And here's a fun little treat. Remember I mentioned those little designs you could find on some of the buildings? Well, here's one that looks like a big sunflower. And it's
That's a cool one.
Yeah, it's on this building. We're now on the southwest side of the map. And this building actually has, I believe there's a second one on this side, or maybe it's on the other building over here. We also have some skins. These look like raccoon skins or something, just kind of hanging up on the side of this building.
Yeah, it looks like raccoon skins or
drying, which is pretty cool. Here it is on the other side. We actually have a different design. This is a separate design as the one on the other side of the building.
It's another one that looks like a crest. And to your point, they're all very unique from each other on the housing complexes.
Yeah, I think they're a really cool little addition to add that feels very distinct from some of the other cities. So I think that's pretty cool. So here, let's talk about the third era. What else is interesting about the third era?
So with the third era, we had mentioned the winery, so we can kind of just like that. That is a longstanding trait of the city now. It was established. It's just a thing. So we will make references to it periodically, but just know that that's something they're sort of known for. There's been some war-related events that have happened where, you know, we had I believe it was a 5-year war where we had some refugees take place in the city of Skingrad. Probably the most notable one, which is very related to the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, would be the Vampiric Count. Which is pretty unique to Skingrad, especially when you find this out.
The leader of the town is a vampire. And because he's a vampire, he's been around for a long time. You get to meet him in The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. But it's not like he dies and then hands off the role to a successor because he's a vampire. He just keeps sticking around. But he seems like a really nice guy, and nobody seems to be worried about that because he's actually good at his job and he seems like he's really nice.
Yeah, proving that, you know, when you're actually being helpful to those around you, exceptions can be made. And just because he's a vampire doesn't immediately condemn him to like, oh, everybody just thinks he's a monster. They want to get him out or whatever, because he actually seemed like a relatively noble count for the region of Skingrad.
So yeah, yeah. His name is
out of the ordinary, but
right. His name is Janus Hasseldor, and yes. he's a vampire. I think there are some quest lines and things that you can do regarding him in Oblivion. Yep. It's been a long time, but I'm pretty sure that's a thing. And and another thing here. Let's take another look at something really cool here. Every major city has a mage's guild, right? A mage's guild and a fighter's guild, usually. And of course, the mage's guild is over here. You can see the eye up on this tower. Yep. And this is the door, and there's some mages standing outside. One of the things I noticed, especially with this guy over here across the street, is that he's just playing with fire. This is Kirasa Ra, a mage wearing Mage's Guild colors. Yep. And
that's a literal Mage's Guild robe as well. It's kind of right. like one of the lower ranked ones, but yep.
Right. And this guy's just kind of standing out here on the side of the main road on the southern part of the city, playing with fire.
Juggling fire.
And then people come up and dance. Like, this guard over here is dancing. People come out and check him up. I think this is my headcanon for this section, because he's not the only one that does it. He's over here. And then if you go across the way to this side, Glurdug over here has a bow on her back, but then all of a sudden she puts away her paper and starts playing with magic. I think that they're making some extra money being street entertainers. That's my headcanon. I don't see like anything on the ground, like a hat or anywhere to put money, but I don't think they're just practicing out here in front of everybody with fire in front of people.
That is an interesting idea to like multitasking with what you're doing. When people find, I mean, it's essentially in a lot of situations with the artistic version of YouTube and Twitch. I mean, when you practice something, but you're good at it, and people are interested to watch you practice it, it basically doubles as a form of entertainment while you do the exercises to improve it. So if mages need to practice, but also can flip coin while like entertaining and being straight performers, why not practice in public?
Right, right. That totally makes sense. So here, I've got some other stuff. We're over here on the southern gate. You can see it on the map right now. And it's not the southernmost gate, because the city's shaped kind of like a bean. So we're kind of in the middle.
Yeah, it's like a kidney.
Right, like a kidney bean. So we're in the middle here. And this is really cool, because you got the gate right here, right? And you got some carts. And again, it's another location that, until you start looking a little bit more carefully, it feels just like any other city. Well, there's a woman up here, Flora Leftrius. And she's standing over the corpse of a vampire. I'm sorry, werewolf. Over a werewolf corpse, not a vampire. And it's just like a dead werewolf here on the ground.
She's just fanning herself. I actually don't think I've ever found this in my playthrough yet.
Like, yeah.
This does not look familiar to me whatsoever.
And she says, if you talk to her, she says, Skingrad is a lovely place, but I sometimes feel stifled within these walls. In the wilderness outside the city, I can truly be myself. Which seems to imply that she may also be a werewolf.
Right. Did she just take out her competition?
Right. Like, what is the deal with that? That sounds so crazy. And then if you look over here in the corner, it's just kind of some normal stuff. There's, for some reason, this desk that's sitting outside with some books and some tools and things on it. And then another one over here. Like, this is maybe where they repair the carts, and they keep some books up here in order to have instructions on how to make a wheel or, you know, whatever else they need, because there's carts down here.
This is some weird environmental storytelling, because it's so nebulous. But like, to that point, one of the things that's a little strange about this situation is werewolves are known to exist. Like, that's not a surprise that, like, okay, there are werewolves in the series. We just talked about the people knew their count was a vampire. At least some did. I'm sure not everybody did. Right. But it's like, people literally interact with gods. It's not unheard of in this. There's people literally juggling fire out in the streets. A world of like ungrounded things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would hardly say that werewolves are customarily like walking down the street. That would be the equivalent of just somebody being like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just standing in downtown New York on top of like a pile of dead boa constrictors. It's still a weird sight, even though we know those exist.
Right.
So even though werewolves are a thing that exists, and it's pretty well understood that exists, just a slain one that she's fanning herself over nonchalantly is very peculiar for
it's
this.
Very weird. It's very weird. But then there's some more normal stuff. Like, if let's head over to the little travel area. This is where everybody hangs out, right? Because they'll warp into the Way Shrine and then go AFK or whatever, because, oh crap, I got to go to the bathroom. And then they come back and they just like are standing around, right? This area, you're going to see a lot because you travel in and out of the city from here. And again, it's one of those things where you're like, well, there's not a whole lot else going on. But it turns out that, we do have a few things going on. They've got some more of these crests on the buildings, like I noted before. And then we have these other examples of locations that really just show regular people doing stuff. This guy right here is making baskets. He has all of this hay and components for basket making, and there's one being made right here. He's just kind of working. Another thing you see a lot of in the city are people washing clothes. And then other stalls and vendors. Like there's a bag vendor over here with a bunch of different kinds of bags and a book. And a lot of these just kind of normal things that you would expect, but you don't really spend a lot of time looking at, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's again, it's what makes the world that we always joke about feel lived in so much, because it's just like these are things that need to be done. Granted, we have the running joke of, are there outhouses? Like, what's going on here? But like, other than weird, like
other than no like bathrooms that, anywhere, yes,
other than no bathrooms and rarely children, the game is designed around like, yeah, this feels like it could really exist in a, you know, it's granted a fantasy setting, but it's like it makes sense.
Yeah. Then we have these cleaners over here. These are people who are clearly doing enough laundry. They're cleaning people's clothes, that these are not just their laundry. These are actual workers who are probably working for the nobles and doing all of the nobles' laundry. You even have this little bath area over here, little buckets of water. And then one other thing, if we head over this way, we're going to head back over here. And while I'm doing this, why don't you tell us what happens in the fourth era? Like, because that's most of the third era is just like wine and vampire count, right?
Right. And there are a few things of note in the fourth era, but in the fourth era, the game that we all know best and is probably the most popular in the series would be Skyrim. So that's more of the region we're in. But it doesn't mean that we don't ever interact with anything related to Skyndgrad. Related to the Skyrim thing, one thing that's actually really interesting, and I forgot about this till we were kind of going through the UESP notes on all of this, was that Sindarin, the Altmer alchemist who you basically deal with for Crimson Nirnroot, he actually brings it through the city of Skyndgrad before actually heading to Skyrim to investigate, and then everybody knows about the Nirnroot stuff. It's the Crimson Nirnroot quest that expands out from that. But it's kind of interesting that like where he kind of started with the whole quest line for himself was actually over in the city of Skyndgrad. So that's interesting just because it's like a pretty well-known quest from Skyrim itself. As well as the other thing that I personally, you can chime in with anything you found interesting from the fourth era too, but like one of the my favorite things about the fourth era was during the Battle of the Red Ring, which is a series of battles that I really wish they would actually go more into because it's pretty intense. It's in the fourth era 175, but there was a pretty severe, this is kind of where we start to see the fall of the empire and its strength in a lot of ways was around here. But there is a pretty major battle that took place as a result of Breville and Skyndgrad being under Aldmeri dominion rule, and counterattacks were thrown from there. So it was like notoriously like a pretty bloody battle. And I just find probably do an episode on the Battle of the Red Ring at some point. We might have enough for a full episode, but yeah. It's just interesting because Skyndgrad is a major player of positioning during one of the major counterattacks from the Aldmeri Dominion during this time.
Yeah, and it makes sense because if you look at the map and we zoom out, you can see Skyndgrad is we talked about this earlier, this fairly centralized location. If anybody wants to travel north from more of the elven lands or south from more of the human lands, it feels like they got to cross over this area, if at least they're on this side of the continent. So, yeah, it makes sense that battles and things, especially, you know, dealing with the empire and the dwindling strength of the empire, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I will say, though, that the Aldmeri Dominion got dunked on in the Battle of Skyndgrad, but like 5 days in, they didn't fare so well. So I'm just throwing that in there too, real quick.
Cool. Well, here we are. We're back on this other side of the map, back over to the temple area. And while you were talking, there was a drunk lady that stumbled by. There's these like little details. Yeah, too much time in the vineyards. But we're on the other side of the crypt, and there's some other fun little details over here. We didn't go this way before. I've noticed a number of dead bodies. I think somebody happened to just run around and kill a bunch of people.
I was going
to
say, I feel like most of these are like player related.
Yeah. So those are not normally there.
They need to sweep the streets.
Right. But you have these tombstones, and then you have the widow's lament. And of course, people leave things in front of tombstones. This is a poem that was left on somebody's grave, and you can read it on the screen right now. We're not going to read out the whole thing right now. But the little details like that really make a place feel lived in. One thing I did note, though, is that the grass is very overgrown where the graves are.
Yeah, not...
They're not getting a lot of visits.
Like, yeah.
This one has flowers and a butterfly and some candles.
The gravediggers aren't exactly doing any groundskeeping in between shifts, it doesn't look like.
Nobody's mowing the lawn.
Nobody's mowing the lawn here.
And then if you look at some of these tombs, they've got some really cool looking crests and things. These feel, again, very European, right? Like with the style of the buildings and the architecture.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then if we head over here, there's this really big crypt, and this is where the Outlaw's Refuge is. And you can tell, of course, by the big symbol on it and the fact that the words pop up when you walk up to the door. But I think that's
a pretty good giveaway.
Yeah, it's especially cool to have a Outlaw's Refuge in a crypt. And I know this happens in some of the other cities as well, but it's a great location.
For sure.
And I appreciate that it's not like on the periphery, you know, like sometimes these are like outside and you have to go out the gate and.
Yes. And I mean, to be fair, since the Outlaw's Refuge are kind of a combo thing in Elder Scrolls Online, where it kind of deals with a little bit of, it's basically just all purpose nefarious business.
Right. It's a little Dark Brotherhood-y. It's a little Thieves Guild-y. It's like, a little bit of just like, hey, you want to do something under the table.
Yeah. Are you looking to do something illegal? Which is just interesting because, like, again, to your point of it being in a graveyard, that definitely pulls more from the Dark Brotherhood side of things.
Yeah. So I think that was a lot of fun. Just that little thing. Oh, even just the streetlights. Did you notice the designs on the streetlights? And this is supposed to be an area that in the events of the game in ESO, there's this forest that shows up out of nowhere. And of course, Cyrodiil was supposed to have been a forest at some point in the history of the lore. And that's one of those contentious things where people are like,
yeah, it's one of the contended things of,
yeah,
you know, was it a writing misinterpretation? Did they literally mean a forest? Did they mean a jungle? Like, there's a lot of debate. Did it get modified because of the power held by, you know, the Numidium and the Tiber Septim's reign type of thing.
Or the limited power of the Xbox 360 when they did Oblivion.
Or the limited power of the Xbox 360.
That may have been part of it. But check this out. I think this is kind of cool. Even the streetlights look like they've got these little vines with some leaves and things on them, which is interesting. It's an interesting choice. I wouldn't have assumed you would have something that looks plant and, I don't know, Bosmer-ish even in an area like this.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. And I wonder if that was more of a time and place situational thing for the Second Era, because ESO obviously takes place during the Interregnum in the Second Era. Because I don't remember that necessarily being a theme that carried through specifically into Oblivion. The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. Right. Again, be it limitations technically or intentionally, but definitely it still gives the medieval Europe vibe going on in this whole region, as Cyrodiil tends to do in all of its parts.
Yeah. And then the last thing is this little lake, it's a pond. It's a pond that somebody constructed, and it's out here in front of the temple, right? We're back here to the front of the temple. And I pointed it out before, and it's just this dirty little pond. In fact, it has a washing board in it. And, like, I don't know what this pile is. It's like a pile of...
Yeah, walk over that? Yeah, okay. I don't know what that is.
That's a washing board.
Yeah, but and this thing, a pile of muck. Yeah,
it's like a pile of muck and leaves.
But yeah, then it just looks like a pile of like filth swept in the corner, which maybe that's what is scrubbed off the clothes from them doing, you know, tilling in the fields and the vineyards and stuff like that.
Maybe
they just put all the muck in the corner and then just like dump it later.
It's kind of weird because a lot of times you end up with these kinds of structures in important places where you have big monuments or buildings and things like that. And you have like a reflection pond nearby where you can see the reflection of the building in it.
But this
is not kept up very well. I mean, heck, there's even a little washer's tub, like a big old bucket with some fabric in it or something. And then right next to it is more barrels and this little traveling door thing. Like, this guy, Rogstig, can't talk to him, but he's just hanging out here. And then, yeah, more washing stuff over on this side. It's like they use this little pond, which is supposed to be this, like, very nice viewing section of the temple, you know, and they just use it for, like, garbage.
So, right.
I thought that was a little weird, too.
Yeah, it's a placement of it is very interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, pretty weird. So, there you go.
Refugees clean.
Those are all the details. That's all the fun stuff I was able to find. If you found something in Skinrad and we didn't find it, please let us know. Comment, let us know. We'll go check it out. I have a feeling there's some other stuff hidden. I did poke around in a number of the buildings. There are a number of manors that are actually very large. You can sneak in. You can pick the locks. You can sneak in. You can see people walking around. There's some weird stuff in some of those, but I don't know that it was intentionally weird. You know, like a guy pacing around in what seems like someone else's bedroom. Like, you know, like, why is he in what seems like a lady's bedroom just pacing around? That's a little weird. Why is he just being a creep? Like, there's some of that kind of stuff, but nothing else that I was like particularly on my list of like, oh, you should go check this out. So if you do find some other things, definitely let us know. And thank you for tuning in. I thought this would be a fun way to do kind of a history / let's look at all the cool stuff in the city kind of episode. So I hope you enjoyed it. Lotus, you have anything else you want to say about this or anything else before we
head out? I was going to say, I hope everybody enjoyed the little pseudo virtual tour that we tried to do. Obviously interested in how people liked the format of this when we do. So, you know, there's some things that this seems like this might be a good format for, obviously not all encompassing, but this seems like this might be a good format for when we're trying to like show specific areas and stuff like that. I kind of liked it because we had the visual aid. I hope that comes through as well with the audio as best we could describe it. But other than that, I hopefully we covered the majority of Skingrad stuff and my voice held out the entire time pretty much.
Yeah. And this is us making up for last week. Lotus had some power stuff. Yeah. I had what eventually became a hurricane come through.
Yeah,
Florida.
I was going to say, mine, over the weekend, we had a thunderstorm that kind of knocked out power. Yeah. And then you immediately got hit by a hurricane. And I was like, okay, cool. I guess we won't be recording at all this weekend.
Yeah. So we're doing this episode tonight. It'll go up as soon as possible for everybody. And then we're doing another episode on Thursday to kind of
we didn't want to miss
schedule.
It.
So hopefully you guys enjoyed all of that. And Lotus, you have anything else you want to share? Anything going on with Tales?
No, or? Not really. what do you call it? I'm still trying to find time to continue my adventure through Daggerfall so that we can finish that up for everybody. And hopefully this weekend we will be recording another episode of the Unofficial Elder Scrolls Pages Tales of Tamriel for if you need a little more podcast fix from your Elder Scrolls side of things.
Awesome. And you guys know all my stuff, robotsradio.net for all my shows and other lorecasts and all that kind of stuff. And for our YouTube audience, if you enjoyed this, then go click on the little link that's going to pop up somewhere on the screen and go check out another video because we got a bunch of them. All right. And chat, thank you for being here for the live chat. I always love everybody commenting and hanging out. So thanks for being here, everybody. All right. That's going to do it for us. Have a wonderful week and we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.